Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. Wherever you are right now, chances are you could use a little reminder of this revolutionary love that sees no stranger. Among other voices in this episode, you'll hear Greg Meyer's encouragement and challenge to wonder. Curious how wonder can help us live in a way that creates no strangers? Well, here's Greg.
Thursday morning last week, January 7th, the day after the rioting at the Capitol in D.C., one woman offered a two-line letter to the editor in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. "Never again," she wrote, "do I want to hear that I should try to understand the Donald Trump voter." End of op-ed. Now, don't let that trigger an argument between Trumpians and anti-Trumpians. That is an important argument, but not where I'm taking you. The question that she is raising that we need to figure out if we want to heal our nation, and in the process ourselves, is this. Is there a limit, a point after which you are justified in no longer trying to understand the reality from which some other person else is thinking or speaking or acting? Is there a point at which you or I can say, I already know everything I need to know about you? Or to put the question in the language of this podcast series, it is asking, are there situations in which some people can be left as strangers, not be made neighbors? Are there people whom we are not expected to love? This question is at the heart of revolutionary love, as Valerie Kaur is revealing it to us. Facing this battle of letting no one be a stranger, and the pain, the anger, and sadness it raises up within us, is key to being the starting point of a love that can move the immovable. Listen with me to a portion of Valerie Kaur's 2017 TED Talk. You may recall it from last week's podcast. Hear the struggle to wonder about someone who deserved no understanding from her.
So I returned to the gas station where Balbir Singh Sodhi was killed 15 years to the day. I set down a candle in the spot where he bled to death. His brother Rana turned to me and said, "Nothing has changed." And I asked, "Who have we not yet tried to love?" We decided to call the murderer in prison. The phone rings. My heart is beating in my ears. I hear the voice of Frank Roque, a man who once said, "I'm going to go out and shoot some towheads. We should kill their children too." And every emotional impulse in me says, "I can't." It becomes an act of will to wonder. "Why?" I ask. "Why did you agree to speak with us?" Frank says, "I'm sorry for what happened, but I'm also sorry for all the people killed on 9/11. He fails to take responsibility. I become angry to protect Rana."
Okay, I've heard enough. That was an honorable attempt. Valerie and Rana did more than they should have had to do. They tried to give this man a chance to show remorse, to do what was right. But even after 15 years behind bars, it isn't in him. There is nothing more to know. Frank Roque can and should rot in jail. Or so it's easy to feel. Let's go back and listen again.
"Why did you agree to speak with us?" Frank says, "I'm sorry for what happened, but I'm also sorry for all the people killed on 9/11. He fails to take responsibility. I become angry to protect Rana." But Rana is still wondering about Frank, listening, responds, "Frank, this is the first time I'm hearing you say that you feel sorry." And Frank says, "Yes, I am sorry for what I did to your brother. One day, when I go to heaven to be judged by God, I will ask to see your brother, and I will hug him, and I will ask him for forgiveness. And Rana says, we already forgave you. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Forgiveness is freedom from hate. Because when we are free from hate, we see the ones who hurt us not as monsters, but as people who themselves are wounded, who themselves feel threatened, who don't know what else to do with their insecurity but to hurt us, to pull the trigger or cast the vote or pass the policy aimed at us. But if some of us begin to wonder about them, listen even to their stories, we learn that participation in oppression comes at a cost. It cuts them off from their own capacity to love.
Welcome to the second week of our Fabric podcast series, No Strangers, Opting In to Revolutionary Love, in which we are delving into the hope and the direction found in Valerie Kaur's book, See No Stranger. We're calling this week's piece of that, Opting Into Wonder, Return to Love. I've listened to this passage from Valerie Kaur's TED Talk many times, and I still cannot hear it without tearing up. It isn't just her passion and the strength of her story that makes those feelings well up in my eyes. It's the self-knowledge that although I have no one in my life who compares to who Frank Roque was for her and Rana, nonetheless, I have allowed myself to not wonder about many people. I've dismissed people from deserving any effort of love and understanding for me as if there is nothing more I need to know and nothing more that I need to do. And by doing that, I sense that I have stripped those people of some of their humanity. And I sense in some deep, hidden way, I have stripped some of my own humanity away as well. You likely have had people who have hurt you, who stripped you of your humanity in ways that I have had the luxury of never experiencing. And I do not feel I can ask you to wonder about those people, to pretend to love them. I cannot help but think of you, my black and brown-bodied sisters and brothers, enduring the display of white supremacy encouraged by our own president this past week. It is a heavier lift than I can do to ask you to wonder about them as they attack our democracy by attacking the election and the U.S. Capitol with an impunity that your black and brown bodies would not have had. But Valerie Kaur's example encourages me to invite you to this question that she asked. Not for the sake of the rioting mob members, but for your own, so that you might be free of their power over your own humanity. Valerie Kaur's question is this: who have you not yet tried to love? Who have you dismissed without wondering about who they are inside and why? Who have you let be less than human? Pause with me for a moment. Take a deliberate, slow breath or two. I suspect the faces of those whom you are tempted to dismiss, to relegate to stranger status, are flashing in your mind right now. Observe them. See them. Let go of the judgment that easily goes along with this, judgment of them and of yourself for feeling that way. As Fabric, we find our way forward by remembering to weave all three strands together. That strand of true self. You can't move forward without acknowledging your whole self, who you really are and what you feel as you experience this world around you and the people in it. And the strand of others. Others, after all, are who this is largely about. And then there's the third strand, that which is beyond us, often captured by many cultures with the shorthand name of God, however their language and tradition may say and imagine it. My own roots are anchored in the Judeo-Christian tradition, and that has been the primary tradition and narrative that has shaped our Fabric community. Its depth and wisdom speak urgently about this issue of loving others. As we said last week, it presents this idea of loving others as yourself as a cornerstone early on within its writings. And Jesus and his followers hold it up as the one thing from which all else they have to teach springs. And Jesus doesn't just leave it there. He goes on to say, You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemies, as if there might be exceptions to who our neighbors are. But he adds, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. He leaves no wiggle room for us. For Jesus, this is not an external truth, something imposed on us from outside. It's an internal truth, something that reflects the way the world is truly woven, that speaks from our own hearts, a message we hear when we're quiet and know all three strands within ourselves. There are no strangers, only parts of ourselves that we do not yet know. That sounds good, but it's hard to practice. The woman who wrote that letter to the editor isn't a bad person. She's just a person, a person struggling with a challenge of wondering about someone she feels so far away from, someone who offends her so deeply. We all know that challenge. But you know, part of the problem is that word love. English is notorious for having more synonyms and choices of words than almost any other language. It drives English learners crazy. But for love, it's the opposite. We have a paucity of terms. It can be hard to love our enemies when the only word we have for it is the same one that we use for that person that you fell head over heels for and committed your life to, the parent you spent your life's ups and downs with, or what you feel for the child who is helplessly dependent on you. In Greek, the language of the Bible, from Jesus' time, there are three words for what we lump into love. There's philos, roughly the love of compassionate care that we have for others, agape, the love, the endearment or commitment we have for family and that we experience in community. And then there's eros, romantic love. Now, I'm not proposing that those are the definitive variations of love, but they do make imagining love for someone that I don't understand or really like a little more possible. So, if you're going to wonder about that person whom you would rather dismiss, it's important to have a better sense of what love is, so that you can have it, but not expect it to be like the love that you have, say, for someone you know intimately, or that you have a lot of shared experience with. It's also important to have a sense of what we aren't talking about in loving others, what we aren't doing by taking that step of stopping the judgment and instead wondering about them. So let me be clear. In asking you to wonder about another, you are not expected to accept, to tolerate, respect, support, condone, approve of, or forget what they have done or said or believe. You aren't even expected to like them. Pausing to wonder about another person isn't doing those things. You wonder in order to see them as a human being. Wounded and working to make sense of the world, most of which you have never experienced, it is to recognize that while what they have done may be evil, cruel, unlawful, inconsiderate, they themselves are not evil. Even the person bent on destruction is acting on a long passage of experiences from which they formed meaning, relationships, and they developed trust around. The role of love is not justice. Its job is not to judge right and wrong. Love seeks to understand and to tend the wound in others and in itself. And when love seems impossible, it starts with wonder. In Valerie Kaur's experience with the murder of Balbir Uncle, at first Rana could not wonder. As he said, nothing has changed. But at that moment, Valerie could wonder. Who have we not tried to love yet? She asked. That's when they decided to call Frank Roque. But when they did and heard him equate her uncle's life with all those killed on 9/11, it robbed her of her ability to wonder. That's when Rana could wonder. He pressed on. Frank, this is the first time I've heard you say that you were sorry. Wonder is a choice we make. It may come naturally to wonder about the things we like and that we delight in, but it is a choice when we must wonder about that which we would rather dismiss. Sometimes we must take turns and hold the pain for one another and wonder for them, like Rana and Valerie did for one another. The healing that wonder brings is something we must each do in and for ourselves. But the way wonder comes to us, it needs others. It needs compatriots, fellow sufferers, family, fellow hope seekers. Wonder also needs to start small. Wondering how someone could do something so opposite from what you value or what you would do is too big of a leap from what you actually know and understand about that person. Just think of the long line of experiences that took that person to where they are. Wonder about smaller things and let what you discover open your capacity to wonder about bigger things. Kelly Plago is giving us glimpses of revolutionary love these weeks. Kelly experienced the transformative power of wonder in her own life, and it started small and grew. Let's hear from Kelly.
On Christmas Eve, a friend posed this question on Facebook. What sparks your sense of wonder right now? If not now, what led you into wonder as a child? My answer to that question has always been the same, whether adult or child. I am led to wonder by a deep desire for human connection. This desire leads me to ask questions about people, cultures, the differences I observe between other people and myself, and to always be on a quest for discovering answers to my questions, specifically through friendship. As a college freshman at Augsburg, I shopped at the Cub and Target on Lake Minnehaha. I would do my grocery shopping at Cub and then run over to Target to pick up whatever little other things I needed. I remember so clearly this one time standing in Target behind a Spanish-speaking mother and daughter. While they were having their conversation in Spanish, I started to daydream about what it would be like if I could understand what they were saying to each other and perhaps even enter into conversation with them in their language. I know it's simple, but that is wonder. I wondered what it would be like to speak another language. I wondered about connecting and creating relationship with others on their terms. It wasn't long after that I registered for classes to begin to learn Spanish. Learning Spanish opened the door for so many parts of my life that I pretty much take for granted now. It led me to Guatemala for a semester abroad, which then led to a longer-term move when I started CELUS. Also opened the door to Latin music and salsa dancing, which ultimately brought me to my richest, most cherished, and challenging relationships in my life, because that's where I met my husband, Felix. Now, today, the Spanish language and bilingualism is a gift that we are passing on to our next generation, to Mateo. All of this began with a simple daydream at Target on Lake Street. Wonder. I was studying abroad in Guatemala in 2003. For one class session, we had a guest from a well-known international nonprofit join us to lecture on cross-cultural ministry. He opened his talk with this simple question, "Why are you here?" Having been one of the only students in my cohort with prior travel to Guatemala, I was eager to answer. I said, "I'm here because I love this country. I love the people and the culture, and I want to learn more." This guy replied, "If you're saying you love Guatemalan people, then you must not know very many of them." Damn. I was stunned. His answer was such an affront to my inclination to wonder and connect with people. I can't excuse what he said to me, but ultimately this brief conversation is what sealed my conviction to move to Guatemala for the longer term and to start CELUS Ministries. I guess there's a difference between sitting in wonder and closing that wonder, turning it off. In 2009, Felix and I were ready to purchase our first home. We narrowed our search to, quote-unquote, near Lake Street. We spent most of our time eating out and celebrating Felix's Mexican heritage on Lake Street, so we figured we might as well live nearby. The house we ended up buying is on the edge of the central neighborhood, right at the 35W and 36th Street exit ramp. When Jamar Clark was killed by police in 2015, the freeway right outside my door was taken over by protesters. This happened to occur on a day when I was hosting a church group in my home, and together we wondered about it all. What was the objective of the protest? How did blocking traffic on the highway help or hurt that objective? What happened between the police and Jamar? What is it like to be a police officer? Do police actually help or harm the community? What is our role as Christians who hold space in this community? Are we called to be peacemakers, join the protest and demand justice, advocate for policy change? Our conversation stuck with me. The questions lingered. I was caught up in wonder. When an opportunity arose to apply for a job with MPD, the Minneapolis Police Department, I was ready to step further into wonder. Don't get me wrong, the prospect terrified me too. I'm not a gun person. I hate violence, and my heart is tender. These qualities are not exactly the stereotype of a person working in a police department. But I guess that's the point. My wondering became, how can I, being who I am, have influence within the police department? My move into working for MPD was counterintuitive and on some levels sacrificial. The work is hard and overwhelming and sacred. I knew that going to work inside a system that felt like the enemy in some ways was going to be challenging. I did not know that it would become so personal. When George Floyd was killed by cops this last year, my first instinct was to flee, just to quit. I had to wonder if working in a police department was really the right place for me. And then, on the second or third day of the unrest, I received a call from an acquaintance that was totally unexpected. My friend, who is a Black immigrant raising young adult children in Baltimore, you can imagine her experience. She called me and prayed for me over the phone that I would have the courage and resolve to press on and stay committed to serving the residents of Minneapolis. This story has no conclusion. It's still being written every day. Reflecting on these experiences through the lens of See No Stranger, I realized that I chose to keep an open mind about police officers, seeking answers to my questions through friendship, which is what has always been my tendency. It's clear to me now that the only reason I am where I am today is because at one point I dared to wonder.
Callie's journey of wonder started with little intention, just with plain wondering. Standing behind a mom and her daughter at a checkout, wondering what would it be like to understand and to speak to you in your own language. She wasn't wondering why they left their home country, whether they were documented or not, why they didn't try to speak English. How could she answer such wonderings? She just wondered what it would be like to connect. When it comes to another person, there are two kinds of wonder. The too big kind that tends to ask things like, why did you do that? And then the more right-sized questions of, who are you? A question that we experience with simple wonderings like, I wonder what you will have for dinner. I wonder what is in your heart when you put your child to bed at night. I wonder what you think and feel when you see a sunset. I wonder what it would be like to play a game of cribbage with you or speak to you in your own language. When I attempt these simple, small wonderings, I begin the long, hard work of knowing the one who was a stranger now as a human being, not just as a representative of the category I had placed them in. Wonder best starts small, and it wonders just for the sake of knowing the other person, not as a backdoor to getting what you want. Ever catch yourself doing that? I want to understand that person, but if I really look deep inside myself, I realize that it is only so that I can know how to explain my position better, so that they will understand my values and my perspective in a way that they will get it and agree with me. Now, wonder has no agenda, except to have its eyes open to the other person's way of seeing the world and themselves. Likewise, wonder has no time limit, no schedule, no particular path that must yield results or it is time to quit. Wonder takes time. It stumbles into learning. It surprises us with where it goes and what it shows us. Kelly also showed us that wonder often starts with oneself. She didn't wonder why that mom and daughter were different. She wondered how she could be different. Does it make any sense to you that your ability to truly wonder about anyone else will be limited by how much you are able to wonder about yourself? Why do I want a hybrid car, not a pickup truck? Why do I assume I'd get a job after high school instead of going to college? Why do all my friends have the same color skin as I do? Why do I like jazz, not country? Why do I freeze up when I see conflict in the people around me? Why do I like the out of doors so much? Silly questions, maybe, but remember, start small. Practice when it's easy so you have the skills you need when it's not. Let's pause here for a moment and listen to Joe Davis' spoken word poem, Who is Your Everyone? In his words, you will hear our wonderings about others reflecting back on assumptions of our own that need some wondering to be free.
Who is your everyone? Is it only citizens from the country you were born in, or migrant workers whose customs and cultures may seem foreign? Is it only those in your church Sunday morning, or the non-religious, or Jews, or Muslims, or Mormons? With who does your everyone begin or end? Is it only those with your zip code, your language, your skin? Can your vision extend beyond us versus them, towards a bridge of love where true justice bends, where all our walls crumble and fall between those people who make us feel so uncomfortable? Different and distant, they seem so unlovable. But we will come to discover God loves them too. No more or no less, but just as much as you. This is the truth we often may forget. There is a table that offers all a place to sit, that of a transformational relationship, when we celebrate everyone's human sacredness. For we are them and they are us, all created in God's image. Who is your everyone?
Having your everyone be everyone is what we would call a horizon goal. You never quite get there. The further you walk towards it, the more you discover lies between you and it. After all, it isn't just all people, it's all parts of all people. And it isn't just others, it is yourself. What parts of you are kept closed off from your love, from your wonder? Chances are you walled those off when you were so young that you aren't even aware that you haven't let your wonder begin to melt the walls of shame, inadequacy, uncomfortableness, acceptance that stand between you and your full love of yourself. Joe spoke to this with his words. When I allow others to be strangers, when I say I do not need to know that person for who they are in and of themselves, I am dismissing their humanity. They are an object, static, reduced to my experience of them, not seen for their own experience of their own lives. And as Valerie Kaur points out, when I can dismiss someone else's humanity, I can justify any form of inhumanity towards them, including violence. And when I allow myself to dismiss someone else's humanity, I have said something about my own. Is not the truest mark of humanity the capacity to bestow it upon another? And if what I am missing in that person that I call stranger is their humanity, do I not realize that my not wondering about, not searching for their humanity is cutting them off from having that which I want to find in them? To not wonder about another can so easily be justified in our own minds, but it is eroding our own ability to love and our ability to realize the world that we want to live in. We see this acted out in nature so clearly. Our Western relationship with nature has been one of stranger. We have not given our planet, with all its forms of life and land and sea and air, value in and of themselves. We actually call the various parts of this planet resources. The plants and animals are preserved and cared for in as much as they serve, feed, entertain, or at least don't bother us. And we have seen where that relationship has taken us. When the earth is a stranger, not just part of us that we do not yet know, we are justified in exploiting it. And we have. And because of that, we now face massive changes that threaten our own ability to exist here. We are one. Separateness is an illusion. It may play out differently, but it is the same thing among us as human beings. Separateness is an illusion. Not wondering to discover what life might be like for that person you now know as stranger comes at a cost. To them, to ourselves, to our world. Valerie Kaur says that wonder is the wellspring of love. I think she's right. And while grief, anger, and joy are not chosen, they happen to us, wonder can be chosen. And we get good at what we choose by practicing it. This week, I invite you to practice wonder by adding a couple words to what we invited you to last week. Scan the world for that which feels like stranger to you, that which in your mind has no life of its own, but is only the flat, two-dimensional story that you create for it. Pause and notice those strangers within yourself or in the people around you, physically, in the news, social media, and also in the natural world around you. And say to them, even if only in your own mind, uncle, auntie, sister, brother, father, mother, child, friend, you are part of me I do not yet know. That's what we invited you to last week. Today, I ask you to add this. I wonder, and then fill in the rest of the question. I wonder what you will have for dinner tonight, where you will sleep, what it is like to have been a mineral deposit deep beneath the earth for millions of years, to have been part of a cloud, a glacier, a river before you entered this cup that I will refresh my body with. I wonder what fills you with joy. Make your everyone, everyone. No strangers, only neighbors. Parts of yourself you do not yet know. It is a dream that our world needs, that you need, and that you can start to realize.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.